The Senate Education Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Friday, February 12, 2021. The time is 9:01, and we're meeting in the State Capitol Room, number 205. In attendance are Senator Hughes, Senator Begich, and myself, Senator Holland, the chair, Senator Machicki, and Senator Stevens may be otherwise busy for a bit. They might be able to join a little later. Thank you to Nancy, our recording secretary, and Douglas, our moderator today. As a reminder, please silence your cell phones. Today, we will continue our conversation regarding the funding and learning impacts of COVID-19 on K through 12 education in Alaska. We're joined by four superintendents representing school districts from around the state. Superintendents, would you start by introducing yourselves and your districts, including just a quick number on like historic student enrollment and whether you've experienced an increase or a decrease or static because of the pandemic. And we will start with Superintendent Kim Hankins.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Kimberly Hankins. I'm the superintendent of Lawrence Heskett School District.
Could you, one moment, I think we're working on your audio a little bit. Could you repeat that again?
Yes. Good morning.
That sounds so much better. Your Superintendent Kim Hankins, Lower Kuskokwim School District.
Yes, good morning. LKSD operates 29 schools in 24 locations over an area of 22,000 square miles, most being roadless tundra, and Bethel is the hub. I'm Kimberly Hankins, superintendent in my first year in this role with LKSD. LKSD's student enrollment traditionally hovers near 4,000 students, of which approximately 95% are Alaska Native. We have seen a decrease in our ADM this year of 47 students, with some moving to Anchorage, some opting for statewide homeschool programs, and some moving to neighboring districts. Our region is one of high poverty. Most of our families practice a subsistence lifestyle and live in multi-generational homes. All LKSD communities, with the exception of one, have been directly impacted by COVID. As you know, the YK Delta region has had the highest COVID rates per capita in Alaska for over 4 months now, and on and off some of the highest rates in the nation. It's been common for our rates to average 4 to 6 times that of the next most heavily impacted region in the state. In addition to high COVID rates, our region has a very limited and vulnerable healthcare system. Our district has lost 2 employees this year to COVID. We've had countless employees and students sick with COVID, and our communities have moved in and out of lockdowns as needed beginning last summer. We did open the majority of our schools in August at the medium risk level with a hybrid model for in-person learning and parent choice. Our 5 Bethel schools and 4 village sites open the school year with remote learning, and our Bethel schools have remained in remote learning, with Bethel experiencing widespread community transmission since last fall. Student achievement and health and safety have certainly been our top 2 priorities this year. Some of the positives this year, we have an incredibly dedicated staff who are really going above and beyond to reach our families. They've been highly innovative. We still struggle with students and families who aren't engaged, but it's not for lack of trying. We've reached families by phone, email, VHF radio, home visits, packet delivery, device exchange, Zoom, and our intranet system. That's also a positive, the intranet system we've put in place this year. Another positive of this year is we've really had to work closely with our tribal organizations. We've developed strong partnerships as we've navigated varying village mandates, teacher travel in and out of communities, and our district's ability to deliver learning materials and food during periods of lockdown. Challenges we face, of course, access to internet. Internet equity is a huge issue in rural Alaska. We estimate that only 10 to 15% of our students have access to home internet. Getting our intranet system into place has been a challenge, but it is up and running. And again, reaching all students. We know that we've had students struggle this year. We're asking a lot of parents and families. It's a heavy lift. On the other hand, we know that some of our students have been thriving with the flexibility of remote learning. It has allowed more time to do subsistence activities together for our families. And with our case rates now on the decline, and hopefully they stay that way, and with our healthcare provider providing excellent vaccine distribution in our region, we are working to implement a phased reentry plan and really look forward to bringing students back into our buildings. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Superintendent Mike Hanley, Chugach and Aleutian Region School Districts.
Thank you. My name is Mike Hanley. I'm the superintendent of the Aleutian Region School District as well as the Chugach School District. Both districts are very remote. The Aleutian Region School District consists of two schools right now, in ADAC and ATCA. Far out on the Aleutian chains, the farthest most populated islands out there. Our enrollment has remained steady, but we are the smallest school district in the state right now with an enrollment of less than 30 kids between those two schools. So with the Chugach School District, we have decided to partner with the Aleutian Region School District to share services because of our size. The Chugach School District is about the middle of the road as far as sizes for school districts in the state. We currently have over 600 kids, most of those in our homeschool program. We have three traditional brick and mortar sites out in Prince William Sound, one of them on the road system, Whittier, then to Titlick and Chenega, which are both out on islands in Prince William Sound. We did see an increase in enrollment this year, not in our traditional sites, but in our correspondence program. We saw about a 30% increase in enrollment there.
All right, thank you so much. Superintendent Larry Ledoux, Kodiak Island School District.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Ledoux from the Kodiak Island Borough School District. We're, a little bit diverse. We have five rural schools that have a population from 10 to the highest this year probably being 29. And we have sort of urban schools here in Kodiak where we have four large elementary schools, a middle school, and a high school, and then a comprehensive preschool program. Our rural populations stayed somewhat static this year. They've been declining over the years substantially. Our district has been undergoing a population decline, and that did not change this year. What we predicted to lose in students, we did, and that had nothing to do with the current challenges we face with COVID-19. However, we were very pleased that we actually didn't lose any of our students, but we did have a movement of students. Our homeschool program is very robust. It has been for years, and we had 92 students in last year, and this year we have 250. So we were able to hold on to our homeschool students. We also constructed a complete remote school for our district. Many parents did not feel comfortable sending their kids to school, so we constructed a remote school, and it is a K-12 school. It's attracted 350 students. It's staffed initially with teachers who felt, because of health reasons, that they were uncomfortable teaching in our regular schools. And so our remote school has a teacher for every grade, and they come from every school in the district. And that's worked out very, very well. And then we have probably 1,800 students in our regular school system. The remote school helped us lower our PTR in every classroom so that we could maximize social distance. So we have all four schools going, rural, homeschool, our remote school, our K-12 remote school, and then our regular schools. We've been green most of the time throughout the year. We spent most of the summer, we had nine work groups of teachers, parents, administrators that really tried to take advantage of everything we learned last spring to construct, you know, these different program schools, and then a lot of time communicating to our families so that they knew exactly what we had to offer and how it was going to work. So that's pretty much where we are right now.
Thank you so much. And Superintendent Bridget Weiss with Juneau School District. Are you muted? Well, still not hearing you. I'll just pass on a little bit of other news that we had invited Superintendent Karen Gabrick with Fairbanks School District, who was unable to make it. If possible, she may join in a little bit later. But Superintendent Weiss, did you want to try again?
Yeah, let's try this again. Can you hear me now?
There you are. Now we hear you.
Thank you. New technology, a new laptop, and I don't use Teams very often, so that was a close moment.
Well, thank you so much for getting it resolved. Yeah, just a little bit of background information as far as your current enrollment and whether it had an increase or a decrease, maybe a little bit of background information on your district.
Sure, thank you. You all are pretty familiar with Juneau School District. We normally run about 4,600 students, and we were definitely hit by...
Superintendent Weiss?
Yep.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we have to have a brief at ease to work on a technology issue. I apologize, Superintendent Weiss. Would you please state your name and your affiliation, and then begin?
Thank you. Yes, I am Bridget Weiss. I am the superintendent in Juneau School District. We normally have, we plan for 4,600 students to start this year. That was our enrollment a year ago in our normal October count. We actually had this fall 4,079 students. So we lost about 570 students. As well, we had 400 students similar to Kodiak who went from our brick and mortar school to our district homeschool program. Normally that program holds 35 to 50 students, and we currently have 430 students in that program. So we had to think very quickly on our feet. We were grateful for those families that stayed with us for sure. And so we're running such a variety of programs. We also heard from our families that they wanted distance learning, but to stay with their neighborhood schools. They felt more comfortable with their neighborhood school teachers and support from those schools. And so we are operating distance learning from our neighborhood schools as well as through the Homebridge program. We currently have opened schools at elementary level in small cohorts 2 days a week, half days, and we're looking very soon to expanding that to longer days. We have our middle school students attending at least one day a week. We're about to move to at least 2 days a week, full days there. And at high school, we operate 3 full days during the week. We've been doing that. We've been rolling that in since January 11th, and I'm pleased to say that our mitigation strategies are working very, very well. We've had a handful of cases that have been present in our schools. We've had zero spread. And we, in Juneau, of course, our health status numbers are better than they've ever been. They started to uptick just a little bit in mid-January, but they've come right back down. So we're really pleased about that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Just to let everyone know what we're looking at on timing-wise, we have an early floor session, so I'll be ending today's meeting in about an hour at 10:15. And I believe I have a question from Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and through the chair to each of you, and I think this is probably more relevant for LKSD and possibly for Chugach and ADAC. Yet last night I was meeting with a number of principals from around the state. In particular, I was talking to a principal from Wainwright who indicated up on the North Slope where, as you may recall, over the last couple of years, the company Quintillion has dropped free fiber optic cable. They talked about, however, the phone company charging families up to $1,000 a month for access to that cable, which, of course, as the superintendent from LKSD has pointed out, these are areas in our rural places of high poverty. They have been unable to conduct their Zoom classes because families cannot afford to access the internet, even though those cables were dropped for free. So my question to you is, do you have similar situations with monthly charges that are essentially barring families from accessing the very virtual education we're hoping to be able to provide in these kinds of crises times? That to me is a question I didn't even know about last night, Mr. Chairman, until they mentioned that. So I'm just wondering if people could comment on their internal experiences in that regard.
We'll start with Superintendent Hankins.
Yes, through the chair, Senator Begich, great question. There's no fiber in Bethel, and so everything we can provide is through GCI, through the Terra network. Average internet costs are $200 to $300 a month. I know, for example, my family pays $300 a month, and that's for limited access. And then if you go beyond that, you have to pay more for additional buckets. Like I said earlier, but we estimate about 10 to 15% of our families or of our students have access to home internet. It really is cost prohibitive in rural Alaska. What we've tried to do in response this year is to build our intranet system. We've been really fortunate to work with engineers from Zoom. So our intranet system, the district provided modems for families in Bethel who did not have one, and then a router and an antenna for families in our village locations that did not have one. And then families were responsible for installing those pieces of equipment. And so this took a while, dependent on which communities were in lockdown, how we could deliver supplies, et cetera. But once in place, through a program called Global Protect, students can, from home, access the intranet. And what they have there is access to a learning management system. We are using Moodle since we can host it here on our system. And then they can also access a program called Ensemble, which can host pre-recorded lessons from teachers. They also have access through the intranet to Zoom with their teachers. So we were able to work extensively with Zoom to provide that. So we do have students and teachers connecting that way. For us, it doesn't solve the issue of access to internet for our students, but it did provide an additional way for us to get materials into the hands of students, for students to be at home receiving those materials and then resubmitting to their teachers, as well as for those face-to-face connections.
Thank you. Superintendent Hanley, sorry.
On that point, because it's so related, could each of the superintendents please tell us whether students tend to have smartphones, particularly middle and high school, and whether they're, if they don't have internet at home, whether they're able to tether to their phones through cellular data. I'm curious. I know I just moved into an apartment where I didn't have internet, but I was able to do that using my smartphone, and I'm not sure what kind of cellular data service they have, but if they could speak to that as well, it'd be helpful to know.
Superintendent Hankins, did you have anything you want to add along those lines?
Yes, through the chair to Senator Hughes. I would estimate about 50% of our middle and high school students have access to smartphones with limited data. So I think there is the capacity to use them as a hotspot, but with the limited packages that we have, we would find that it'd be pretty easy to go through all of your data in a short period of time.
Thank you. And Senator Machicki's been able to join us.
Thank you, Mr.
Good morning. And on to Superintendent Handley with Chugach and Aleutian, and the questions like internet connectivity and cell phone usage.
Yes, through the chair, Senator Begich, that is the case out in particularly ADAC and ATCA. It's very expensive. We were very fortunate in the spring where the company allowed free access during that spring when we had to send everyone home. Without that, most of our families would not have access to the internet. One of the positive sides to be in a small district is that we were able to, you know, hand deliver to all families, and that's really what took place. In the Chugach School District, Copper Mountain provides some services out in Prince William Sound. Even then, we only have about half of our families that have adequate internet. It's not uncommon to see kids with smartphones hanging out outside the school. And from my previous experience at the state level, around the state, you know, rural villages, you'll see kids hanging outside the school to access the internet because they don't have it at home. And that'd be the case for our communities as well.
Thank you, Superintendent Ledoux, Kodiak Island.
Our experience is very similar to Dr. Hanley. We're an iPad district. We have been for several years, so we use iPads. And for our rural schools, if students do not have internet access at home, which is the norm, we use cellular iPads so they can essentially hook up to their telephone line to provide services. But it is very expensive. And we also were surprised in our urban setting, the number of families that did not have internet service at home. And that was particularly true in our low-income families. And that was important to us because we've been communicating a lot during normal times through the internet. We found that that was a big hole. But in order to ensure that all of our students had access to internet, we started picking up the bill. ACS and GCI provided free service, but where that was not available, then we actually paid the bill to ensure that our students had access. And in several cases, we had to pick up people that had bills that we had to pay their past bills to hook them up to provide that kind of equity. But I would say in our town schools, I would guess that a vast majority of our kids have smartphones. However, our filtering and the sophistication of the software that we use for instruction, they would not be able to use their smartphones. And our iPads, even though they use their home bandwidth, still go through our filtering, which is a big issue with using their own phones. And our rural sites, many of them have access, but they don't have the data plans available to make them work.
Thank you. Superintendent Weiss, Juneau School District.
Sure. I won't read everything that has been said is totally true here as well. I will try not to repeat things. One of the things we did early on in the year was support families getting access. We had a person solely dedicated to just that, being a liaison to families, and she called families, and we opened up internet support sites in churches, in some of our large spaces in schools, in a neighborhood community center so that kids could just come right there. What we found was not only was it just the access to the internet, but some families have 2 and 3 or 4 kids, and so all of them accessing the internet at once was just impossible, and the amount of data being used was impossible. So we found that based on lots of varying situations, one solution didn't work. We had to have 5 or 6 different strategies going after it. The cell phone use, yes, most of our secondary students do have cell phones, but depending on what plan you have, you either can use it as a hotspot or you can't. And ironically, many companies that have access to use your phone, in order to use your phone as a hotspot, you have to have certain data plans You have to have, if you have an unlimited data plan, then they don't let you use it as a hotspot. So it's pretty cumbersome for families to manage that. And again, this is an area of highest need. As you said, our families who are in the greatest need are the families that have these types of challenges and then have trouble accessing it. Even if we, for some families, as an example, we bought some hotspots that we could have in the home, but that didn't resolve the problem because there was such chaos in the family that they needed more support than just internet. And so that's what led us very early into creating these internet support sites, because it was more than the simple access to internet that was the roadblock for that family.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. So the next topic would be monitoring and measuring student progress, and maybe are you seeing any effects on student performance measures or college preparedness or graduation rates? And Superintendent Hankins, if you'd like to lead off on that.
Sure, thank you, Mr. Chair. We are seeing impacts in student performance. So we know in LKSD, a lot of our students are, about two-thirds of our student population are English language learners. We offer a very strong dual language program in 19 of our schools, but without that face-to-face instruction and interaction and practicing language all day, we know that there are learning gaps. We expect to see lower scores on student performance measures. We are hopeful that our graduation rates will hold steady. They actually did increase a little last year. And this year we are doing a lot of work and providing a lot of support for our seniors. In terms of monitoring and measuring student progress, right now we're using a lot of curriculum-based measures. When the students do return to school, it will be essential for us to administer diagnostics, especially in literacy and math, and then create learning plans for students based on individual needs. I think in addition, you know, we currently offer tutoring at night and on the weekends, but our long-term plans include a very robust summer school program for recovery and or acceleration, extended day programs, Saturday school, offering night classes, et cetera. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That kind of would have gotten into the next question about would you be planning to offer any summer school activities or extended learning opportunities, and if the other superintendents would feel free to roll that into this, that'd be fine as well. Superintendent Hanley, Chugach and Aleutian region.
Yes. Fortunately, our schools have largely been, aside from last spring, they have been attending in our school buildings. The Whittier School was out for about 6 weeks with some cases there. All the other schools have been less than 2 weeks out of the building. So, but even so, we have really experienced what we are seeing as the stresses on the families through this time. Our kids are coming in with some heavy weight, and all of them are required to wear masks, which is great, but there is this overarching sense of stress that is palpable in our students and in our families. So there is a sense of loss of learning, especially from last spring. It's been hard to just come in and try to pick that up when we still have this going on. So I do anticipate some next standardized scores being lower than what we would like to see without the progress that we've been shooting for and aiming for the last few years. We have incorporated, like a lot of districts, there's a tool called MAP. It is a strong diagnostic assessment tool. So we've incorporated that into all of our sites to it's a formative tool that informs both our teachers and our families. The strengths and weaknesses of a student's work, particularly in literacy and in math. We've also incorporated a program called Exact Path, which partners with MAP so that once you get a MAP score, it provides guidelines and lessons that students and families can do both with support from the school and at home based on their strengths and needs. So we've incorporated both of those. We've also, we've got a residential school that's a variable term school that has not been able to be opened this year. And we are using the staff from that school to provide tutoring, online tutoring for a lot of our families at all of our sites. In regards to summer school, I would love, you know, we are willing and able to look at opportunities to provide those resources. I'm honestly not convinced that there is the capacity of our staff or our families or our children. After going through the spring and this year, I just don't think people are going to be frothing at the bit to stay in school. I think people honestly need a break, a health break from what this year has brought. We were going to offer it. I don't know how many people will take advantage of it at this time.
Thank you. Superintendent Ledoux, Kodiak Island School District.
You know, I'm glad that I get to go third because I can say yes, yes to what everybody else has said.
And I appreciate that.
I appreciate that. One of the things I'd like to agree certainly with Mr. Hanley is that kids are coming to school very traumatized. This is very, very difficult for them, not just, you know, some of the learning challenges they have with many kids at home trying to use when they don't have help and trying to keep up with their lessons, but just not knowing what's happening. Our lunch and breakfast program that has been going since March, for some of them is the most stability they have, knowing that that lunch is coming every day for them. And so that's a real challenge in the best of circumstances when kids come to school with those challenges. And also, I'd like to say, because of the trauma to the income of people, that it's that stress in families is coming down to affect the kids in ways that are dramatic and are affecting our kids. Generally, what we have found with when we measure our learning is that our homeschool students that, you know, is increased almost three times, they're doing very well. And generally, the parents who have selected homeschool have the time and the ability to work with their kids. And so we're seeing some positive growth there. We use FastBridge to measure the performance of our students. We have data that we collected last January, and we compared it to our FastBridge assessments that we did on all of our students this January. And what we're finding is that we're literally maintaining the level of growth that we normally would in most of our elementary classes. Meaning we were, if you look at where we ranked statewide, we were unfortunately just above the state average, which certainly isn't where we want to be. But we're still there only a year later. So we've made progress. We just haven't made progress in moving all of our students forward. Where we're seeing the biggest challenge is in our K-1 performance. That's where we're most concerned right now, because those are very, very critical instructional years for reading, and we're seeing it. And another area that we have been working with is our what I call our preschool littles. We're talking about kids that would be coming into preschool, with the families, because of what's going on in the communities, they're coming in without the skills that they need even to participate in preschool programs. So some of the challenges we're facing and discovering we're going to have to deal with for years and really focus attention. One of the things that FastBridge does for us, it designs interventions that we can be very prescriptive in how we help individual kids. So we're making progress there. At our secondary level, we expect our graduation rate to be unchanged from the data that we have so far. We do find, and I can get real specific here, but I won't, that with remote learning, our middle school students have a harder time staying focused and online. Our middle school program, they're still carrying on a 7-period day. Our high school program, we go every day, but we only do half of our curriculum. Classes are a lot longer because we found that high school kids will not sit in front of a computer all day long. they just won't do it, but they, we have been able to keep them for half their schedule. So we're seeing good performance, a lot of hard working. Our summer program is being designed to reflect what we're going to do next fall. So we do a large-scale, what we call summer enhancement. We don't like to call it summer school because no child wants to go to summer school. So we try to create an environment where they want to be. So we use science as a carrier or arts as a carrier. But what we've learned, what our data is showing us, is that summer school has to blend completely into the changes we're going to make in our regular program in the fall. In reference to a comment Superintendent Hanley made, we were worried about whether our teachers wanted to work during the summer. And so we did a survey, and we had probably 50% of our teachers and parapros want to be involved in summer programming, maybe because they can't travel, but we're prepared and ready in role sites. We're going to do career tech enhancement. We're going to be doing a lot of social and emotional. And the interventions we're doing are going to be informed by FRAS Passbridge, so when we move into school, and many times they'll have the same teachers that they had during summer school. So we're getting excited. And the best part of all the summer school planning is that we're not reacting anymore. We're looking toward the future and what we can do about it. And for teachers and administrators, that is an incredible boost just to be able to look forward when we're not dealing with this.
Thank you. Thank you, Superintendent Ledoux. And Superintendent Weiss with the Juneau School District.
Thank you. Earlier this week, we had our school board meeting, and prior to each school board meeting, we have a work session. Our topic this week, this month, was our indicators of success report. So we looked at a lot of data that we measure, and not to be, it's not surprising, nearly every indicator we look at, there's a deficit, there's a loss of learning, there's a loss of performance with our students. And it really didn't matter which angle we looked at for the most part. Seniors seem to be the most adept. I agree with Larry, our results will be very much the same. I don't think our graduation rate is going to be much different this year. They are credit current at the same percentage they were a year ago at the fall semester of their senior year. But as we go down the ranks, there are significant impacts in every way. We looked at credit current students as freshmen, sophomores, juniors. We have more students that are not credit current now than a year ago when we looked at the same data slice for a grade level. When we look at performance in ELA and math at third grade, at fourth grade, at fifth grade, we have fewer students meeting standard right now. It is not surprising at all. Dr. Ledoux spoke to this. We are such a subset of everything going on. So we're the educational conduit, but we don't operate in isolation of all the other ripples of what our country is going through. So when we think about the levels of stress in terms of economic impact, our educational systems, the stress politically, the conflict around racism, it all lands. In some of our communities like Juneau, that is a heavy tourism place. The impact to our families, and as they look into summer and losses that they know they're going to have, all of those things drill down. And so the social emotional needs are as significant as the academic needs right now for our students. There is, and we were, pre-pandemic, we were vulnerable. Pre-pandemic, our most vulnerable populations, our economically disadvantaged, our Alaska Native students, our English language learners, they were already vulnerable. And so now, as school districts, we are just trying to really rip open the box and find new ways to get at it, because all of the disadvantages hit those student groups the most. And then you add the trauma-based impact on top of that. In Juneau, Bartlett Regional has been tracking data as well, and the data is significant. When we compare the year prior to, or the three quarters prior to March 2020, with the first quarter, the next quarter, and the next quarter, the number of Bartlett visits, both for adults and for youth. And remember, our youth are impacted by the adults around them. So the increase in suicide attempts, the increase in behavioral visits is very high in comparison. The averages went way up, both for adults and for students. So as we look at recovery, this is not a short-term recovery. Our families are going to need multiple years of support to grow us out of this condition that we've been in for the last year. We're excited about trying to have a robust summer programming for students, way more than we would normally do. I'm hoping that we might even be able to start some opportunities on Saturdays before this school year ends so that we can get a head start on that and take advantage of our facilities being less populated on Saturdays, maybe even be able to reach some families that don't feel comfortable coming in yet with larger amounts of students. So we're trying to be creative there. But we're also looking at next summer, summer 22, because summer 21 is not going to be enough. So we're looking at multiple summer robust programs and hopefully finding the staff. We as well, so many of our classified staff work tourism jobs in the summer to make ends meet. They won't have those jobs. So we do think we'll have some additional support that way through our classified staff. And then I'm always surprised by teachers. You know, I sort of feel like if I was a teacher, I might be headed for the hills in June and not come back, not take my sunglasses off until August. But we have such dedicated teachers, and I know we will have some of them show up for our kids this summer. But we are approaching it from this holistic manner, academic and social and emotional, and how to re-engage our learners and meet those needs so that we're fueling some momentum going into the fall. Because it is about reading, it is about math, and what we know about the brain is that our kids cannot learn unless they're engaged and their ACEs, their trauma risk status, decreases. And that happens often through our school system through relationships. So we're going to try to put all those pieces together, but we are really looking at a multiple year recovery here and at a time when we're disadvantaged because, again, certain student groups, we weren't meeting their needs pre-pandemic yet. And so we have a lot of work to do, and we have fiscal uncertainty at the same time.
Thank you so much for your comments. And, you know, the answers from all four superintendents are pretty wide-ranging, and y'all are hitting on a lot of the topics. We're going to talk a little bit about funding issues now, and I think some people have made some comments that are going to hit on some of these questions, but not everyone, I think, has. But I think somebody had mentioned savings from travel. The question would be, have you experienced any unexpected cost savings or unexpected cost expenses? I heard people talking about internet issues, and I believe it was Kodiak picking up internet expenses for families, but those kinds of things. Unexpected cost savings or unexpected cost incurred because of the pandemic. And once again, we'll start with Superintendent Hankins, Laura Kuskokwim.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. We have not had substantial cost savings. Even though a lot of our schools have been remote for a long time, we have continued to heat and power our schools for staff access and use during this period of remote learning. We run our own buses in LKSD in Bethel, and we've continued to utilize them during this period of remote learning for delivery of meals and materials to families. We started by offering our food program at different locations in Bethel, but what we found over time is that for some of our families, they just couldn't access that. Some had to rely on taking a cab to those locations, and so what we did instead was started home delivery. So we're utilizing our buses in that manner for home delivery of meals and then of learning materials. And then we've also, you know, continued to maintain them. So no real savings there, even though we're on remote. We have had savings with travel. Our travel has been very limited. So we have realized savings there. That would include student travel, staff travel, both in and out of the district. We haven't done any travel out of the district and very limited travel within the district. We've also saved a little bit on costs for substitute teachers throughout the year. Our greatest expense this year has been the intranet project, the hardware, the student devices, and then the recurring fees for that with GCI, and we have been able to access our CARES money for that.
Thank you for that answer. And I will just put this out there for everyone's benefit. We may be losing some of the committee members. There's a lot of outside forces driving the attendance of the committee meeting today. We're going to run through the answers for the next three superintendents and because these are important issues, but we may wind up having to curtail this meeting a little bit. All right, so committee members, feel free to depart as you feel you may have to.
Chairman.
Superintendent, pardon me. Senator Majicki.
Oh, no, I don't want another title. The one I have is bad enough. I appreciate you saying that. We have a piece of legislation on the floor today. We're all very busy. Please don't take that as being reflective of our interest. I'm listening the best I can. I'll come back and review the meeting, but it is a very busy day. And just you in the roll of the dice, you picked a day when we're all swamped. So thank you for being here and really appreciate what you all do. Mr. Chairman, I've appreciated by this group and the group the other day is the realization of sort of the Armageddon that our kids have gone through as well as our educators, but I'm also sensing optimism and excitement about how we're going to work together to climb out of this, which is what our kids really need to see. When they do get back into school, into the classroom, they're going to need to know, and I know that's going to be very challenging for instructors. Buy them extra pizzas, weekend at Alyeska, whatever it takes to keep them encouraged, because our kids are going to need to see that optimism as they come back and know that those loving faces will help catch them back up again. I know my own kids are going through that, and thousands of kids around the state are. So thanks for the optimism I hear today in spite of these challenges.
Thank you for those comments. And I tell you, as a freshman senator here, Fridays are rarely boring in Juneau. I'm starting to figure that out. Any other comments?
No, I'm good.
Yeah. All right, Superintendent Hanley with Chugach and Aleutian Region.
My comments will largely echo Superintendent Hankins in that we did save a fair amount of money on travel, but that also came at a loss of services to our kids. One, we have a residential school in Anchorage that our kids usually come in for two-week intensives that they weren't able to participate in. They haven't been able to participate in. We have special education, speech, OT, and PT services that travel out to our sites on a regular basis. They haven't been able to do that. All that's been moved to online. It works, but it's not the same as face-to-face. So while we have seen some savings in travel, we're not seeing any change in our fund balance because those costs get rolled into additional trainings for our staff to be able to teach via Google Classroom or online services, additional technology for our kids, things like that. So we haven't seen any real savings from moving to online, but as I also said, that most of our schools have largely been continuing to be in school.
Thank you. Superintendent Ledoux with Kodiak Island School District.
Well, it seems like every time we save money somewhere else, we have a need that pops up somewhere else. So if you use the word saving money, I don't think any superintendent in the state would say that they save any money. But, you know, we saved on travel, especially student travel, because we haven't been able to do it. So instead of paying for plane tickets, we're buying uniforms that needed to be changed and equipment that we haven't been able to buy because of our budget. And that's how you get by anyway as a superintendent. You know, if you don't spend it here, you find somewhere where you need it. For instance, we saved money turning down the heat, but on the other hand, we had to turn up our air circulation, which means that we burn more oil. So what you save here, you spend somewhere else. And so we've saved money with substitutes. But again, that goes into the training of our staff and our parapros so that we can provide individualized services to kids. So any savings that we have are eaten up somewhere else in a different account. And that's just the life of a superintendent during tough times.
Thank you. Superintendent Weiss with Juneau School District.
Thank you. I would totally agree. We are scouring for any place we can save. We entered into FY21 in Juneau with a very small fund balance. So we had our final reading of our FY21 budget right about March 9th. So all of this was hitting. You don't know what your enrollment's going to do in August. And so, and in May, we have to sign our teacher contracts. And remember that such a large percentage of all of our budgets are people. So we don't have much budgeting beyond people. We have some, but a very high percentage of it is people. And those are contracts that we can't change once they're signed. We did do some things like we had a couple of late retirees of teachers that in August decided they weren't coming back. We didn't rehire those people. We did everything possible to support our bus company who we contract with because these are community members. So rather than, and we have a multi-year contract with that company as well. So we did everything possible to utilize those like other districts did in food distribution and food delivery. Because these are community members that are also going through a pandemic, and we had some needs. So when all that shakes out, we don't have, in Juneau, we have very little travel in our budget. Our professional development funds went to teacher training for all the new technology. We did that locally, but we had to pay teachers in August some extra days to be able to do that, and teachers all summer to prepare and to help us select programs and technology that would work for them that they preferred. So not really any huge buckets to save. What we were able to do in a few budget revisions was get our fund balance from $213,000, mind you, up through some budget revisions where we could put money back in the fund balance. We're up to about $950,000, but that's well under our board policy of 1.5% of our budget to be in fund balance. So we didn't make it all up, but we tried to at least make some progress knowing that we're going into FY22 in Juneau. Even anticipating half of our students coming back, we're going to take a $1.6 million cut from last year when we make our assumptions about BSA staying the same. We take about 600 students that we lost. We bring 300 of those back in for our planning purposes, and we're at a $1.6 million deficit of revenue compared to FY21. I wish I could say I had savings to go towards that 1.6, but I don't. And we're right now in the middle of that budgeting process for FY22.
Thank you for your comments. One quick question. I'll just run down the list as far as like, was your district able to benefit from any CARES Act funds that were recently offered? And you don't have to spend a whole lot of time on this. You maybe just say yes or no and how much and how your district was able to utilize it. Superintendent Hankins, Laura Kuskokwim.
Yes, Chair Holland, we were. Our original CARES allocation was $2.8 million. And of that, we've spent about 1.6 on supplies and materials, including a lot of PPE and sanitation supplies, and then, of course, the intranet project and those ongoing costs. For ESSER II, we will be receiving a little more than $13 million, and we're putting a large chunk of that aside for addressing learning loss, as I spoke to earlier with summer school programs, extended day programs, Saturday schools, et cetera, for now and in the coming couple of years. And then teacher professional development and then ongoing technology needs, PPE and sanitation supplies, We do need to address some school improvements for air quality and ventilation in two of our facilities using those funds, and then mental health services for students in particular.
Thank you. Thank you, Superintendent Hankins. Superintendent Handley with Chugach and Aleutian Region.
Yes, in the Chugach School District, our first round of CARES Act funding was about $83,000. And we used it largely for sanitation supplies, cleaning supplies, and technology. All those funds were used, as well as a few of our other general funds to take care of those needs. The next round that has is coming out, we anticipate receiving a little over $150,000, and we'll be adding some air purifiers that will have longer lasting effects than just this pandemic, as well as addressing learning loss, some tutoring, some summer school, extra programs and things like that for our kids. Aleutian Region School District is such a small district. Each of our allocations was only about $5,000, and those easily get used up in supplies and a little bit of technology.
Thank you. Thank you, Superintendent Handley. Superintendent Ledoux with Kodiak Island School District.
We're a bit different. Our borough, when they received their CARES money, allocated directly to the district $1.5 million to support increased expenses. And I think we pretty much used it the same way everybody else did, from filtering systems to sanitizing our building, et cetera, curriculum. And so we have not spent any of our CARES money. And one of the reasons we haven't, well, frankly, is because the borough gave us money. Maybe they felt guilty by cutting us over $1 million during the regular budget crisis. But in any case, the CARES money allows us to use it over multiple years. We can carry it over. It's a grant. And we are concerned because of the lack of operational funds to carry on our program, that it's going to be difficult for us to fund some of the interventions that are necessary to help our kids move forward. As our Juno superintendent said, this is a multi-year effort, and we want to make sure that we have that money when we need it, and we were able to do that with the help of our borough. So it's there. We will be using it to fund our summer programming, our interventions during the next school year and the following summer. Our biggest concern, though, is people will look, and I think it's every district, they'll look at some of the COVID grant money as replacing operations money, and it doesn't. And that is a big danger as we go forward, that people will think you've got this COVID money, so you don't need as much to carry on operations. And that's not the case. FY21 budget for us was funded with $1 million cut, a district cut, and a contribution of fund balance of $1.5 million. So we're really tight. And the fact that the borough gave us extra money when all was said and done, it's restricted to COVID uses, not operational funds. So we're looking forward to having some funds to support our student learning next year in the summer.
Thank you. Superintendent Weiss with Juneau School District.
Thank you. Yes, we absolutely, our CARES money was a lifeline. We would not, I really do not know what we would have done without it. We received about $1 million in our first allocation, and our city as well helped us a little bit. Juneau, the city, received $53 million, and we as a school district got $1 million. So they were very helpful. They gave us $2 million to contribute, and that made a really big difference for us. Ventilation is a huge piece to this puzzle, and we have all ridden the wave of this pandemic and all the information that has been overload to everybody about mitigation. The cost of mitigation is extraordinarily high, and ventilation is one of those. So air scrubbers, as an example, we have spent a lot of money to make sure that our classrooms and our buildings have good ventilation. And running those is going to increase our costs of operation, our utility costs significantly. But without that, we had just we would have had really a huge uphill battle to get people back into our buildings and keep them safe. The interesting part that I found just in thinking about our the CARES allocations is that it's because it's based on title, it's really interesting. It's not always based on, it's not always proportional. Our funding so often is based on enrollment, right? So that's how as superintendents we're used to kind of thinking about that, and we know that and we see things flow that way. But pandemic needs are really a different ballgame because it isn't just our, I shouldn't say just, it isn't our solely our high need students that create the cost for the pandemic mitigation and the response to the pandemic. And so it's more of a universal type of cost that is not driven by enrollment. Our whole system is impacted, all of our kids. Even our top performing kids who we want to be able to give enrichment activities because they're ready to launch and go, and we haven't been able to do that. So literally every part of our organization has been impacted, yet the dollars are allocated in this odd proportion that doesn't always make sense. So, and this last CARES money, $2.4 million sounds really helpful, but when you put that over the 3 years that we are going to use that, it's $800 a year. Summer school, if we serve 800 students this summer, mind you, that's out of 4,000 or more, 4,500 maybe, if we're lucky. If we serve 800 students, the cost for our summer school is going to be about over $600,000. So that's one effort, and I've used up all the money for this year. And that doesn't give me any more money for PPE and all these things, new filters for all these air scrubbers, as an example. That we know with variants coming and so forth, that mitigation in our schools for the next school year is going to be really an important part of our operational status.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your comments. I tell you what, I greatly appreciate the time our guests have taken to share their insights with the committee this week. As legislators, we can't do our job well without hearing directly from those who live the issues we're trying to resolve. I'm going to wrap the meeting up a little early today, but I'm going to go around one more time in case we missed anything that you just want to throw out for another minute or two. And we'll start with Superintendent Hankins.
Ms. Chair. I think all of my fellow superintendents have made excellent points. I know that we will continue to experience the effect of the pandemic for years to come. And in thinking ahead to the challenges we face, some of that we don't know yet, and especially in LKSD, where we haven't had kids in person for a while now. We remain very hopeful, like I said earlier, that we will soon be able to welcome students back into our buildings and then be able to really get a true grasp on what their needs are. I anticipate in addition to learning loss, extensive SEL needs, that's why we're looking to set aside money for mental health services. I know this year our students have struggled, our families have struggled, and our staff has accessed our employee assistance program to a rate that we've never seen before. So the pandemic is definitely impacting all of us, but here in LKC, we feel hopeful moving forward. And so thank you so much for inviting me to speak today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Superintendent Hankins. Superintendent Hanley, Chugach and Aleutian Region.
Thank you, Chair Holland. You're not hearing any of the superintendents around the state throwing their hands up and saying this is too much. You're just, every one of us is digging in to meet the needs of our kids. What I've often said is that it's really critical that we meet the needs of our children first so that then we can meet the needs of our students. That becomes more important now, probably more than ever, because we have to address these social and emotional needs so that our students can access their academic goals. We can't just ignore the stressors that they're going through and think that they'll be able to just move into academic pursuits. So the challenge is going to be ongoing. The challenge is going to be great, but I'm confident that we can get there and we'll come out of this, but it's not going to be a quick turnaround. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Hanley. Superintendent Ledoux with Kodiak Island School District. Muted, sir?
You're muted, Larry.
Unmute, please.
When I'm talking with my principals, I share something I learned many years ago as a high school principal, and that it's our responsibility to carry the vision for kids until they can develop one themselves and to help them develop the skills and confidence to do that. And it's the greatest thing in the world to be able to do that with a child and to see them grow into what they can be and to provide the support. And it's the same thing as a superintendent. I think that as superintendents, we carry the vision of our kids and our districts and our communities, and we believe in it. And we talk frequently as superintendents, and we share and get ideas and, take care of one another. And I believe we are carrying the vision. I feel excited. People ask me all the time, how are you doing? And I say, do you really want me to answer? And if they did, I would say, I'm honored to be facing some of the biggest challenges of my career. And it's exciting to be a part of it. And it's wonderful to work with such great educators, our teachers, our cooks have been there every day since this started, trying to prepare lunches for kids, and our custodians. They're just incredible people. It's an incredible honor and a challenge. And I'm doing fine, and I think our other superintendents are doing fine during difficult times. We are carrying the vision. I would like to thank the Department of Education and our commissioner for just an incredible job. He's been there available, and his staff is incredible. Whatever we need, we have. We get callbacks, we get help, we get dispensations when we need it. And I'm just saying that we've got a great team in Alaska, and I really do appreciate the opportunity for us to share with you on behalf of other superintendents. There's so much we would like to tell you of the good things that are happening in the midst of all these challenges. And I appreciate your support, and thank you.
Thank you for your comment, Superintendent Ledoux. And finally, Superintendent Weiss.
Thank you. Yes, I echo a big thank you to have a few minutes with you. And if any group could understand how busy you are, we can, because we do know what busy is like. So you guys have been great today. After leaving Juneau, growing up here, I went to the state of Washington for 26 years, 30 counting my 4 years at Whitworth University. But I started out as a teacher and administrator and a superintendent in Washington. And I can tell you, while I had really great career opportunities there, now being back in the state for 11 years, this is a very amazing place to be an educational leader. And ASA has just jumped on the support for superintendents along with Commissioner Johnson since this situation started. We met weekly, we meet monthly, we do regional meetings, we do informal groups. I'll call the Southeast Soups and say, oh my gosh, we need an hour together. And the work that we can do in this state because of how we do our work together, the fact that you're inviting us in this early to ask us these questions is a sign of that. And I, as a superintendent, nearing the end of my career, I've been doing this for 37 years. So at some point, the door is somewhere in my peripheral vision. I have this huge sense of urgency and a huge sense of hope because I really do believe that we can do things differently in Alaska and we can get different results. And part of that is because of the infrastructure that we have. It's a very intimate leadership state where we have good access to each other, to the department, and to our legislative body. And so that really, it really should come together for some very, very amazing things. And we need the hope. The governor's announcement this week that there had been a change, one, that we were opening it up to the next year, but also that medical team heard the input to say it needs to be all educators. And for that to happen, I can't even tell you, I still get chills today, a couple days later, saying it out loud. And the hope, as I'm working at the vaccine clinic here in Juneau and watching yesterday, are some of our educators start coming through. Every single person working for our families needed that hope because we are human beings and it has been quite a journey. And we've all taken more hits than our share in the last year trying to do this hard work. So we really appreciate, again, the leadership in Alaska getting us to this point with vaccine. You know, if you're going to be on top of a list, let's be on the top of the highest per capita vaccine rollout. And we can do that in Alaska. And so I feel like if we work together, we have stability in funding, and we have a longer-term picture for that stability of funding, we're going to get better results than we're getting today or that we got a year ago. So I just really appreciate your sincere listening to us. And yes, Larry, we want to keep coming back around and sharing with you some of the really brilliant things that are happening in pockets across the state. So thank you very much for your time on a very busy Friday.
Well, thanks so much. Thanks to everyone that's presented information on these important issues today. It is inspiring to see the dedication, determination, and motivation that we're seeing this morning and on Wednesday. A quick comment or question from Senator Hughes?
I'm not going to have a question. I just want to make comment because I just want to tell you all this has been a really relevant conversation, and Mr. Chair, Wednesday's meeting as well. And I appreciate your transparency. I'm really grateful that each of you are at the helm to help your districts and students navigate the rough waters. And one of the things I'm hoping we can track, because I did have to step out today and I apologize, but on Wednesday we heard an estimate that might take 3 to 5 years to catch some of the students up from the loss. And I know one of the things we're trying to close achievement gaps here in the state overall, and now we have this catch-up situation. And I'm hoping somehow we can beat, even on a global basis, that catch-up time and figure out how to do that faster and better. And so, in fact, Mr. Chair, I'd be curious to be tracking that over the next 2 years with other states and other nations. So thank you again.
And once again, thanks to everyone who presented today and Wednesday. We apologize that not every district in Alaska, every school district was able to be heard, but if there are additional comments from districts that we weren't able to have in front of us, I encourage you to provide them to the committee by emailing our education committee staff at ed.king@akleg.gov. That's ed.king@akleg.gov. Our next meeting will be Friday, Monday, the 15th at 9 a.m., and we will shift our focus to pending legislation. Is there any other business before Monday? I'm sorry, Monday, February 15th. Is that correct? 12, 13, 14, 15? Monday, February 15th. I'm sorry, Monday, February 15th at 9 a.m. We'll shift our focus to pending legislation. Having no other business, this meeting is adjourned at 10:13.